Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Peyton Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. And of course, none of this would be possible without the fantastic efforts of our producer, Miss Katie Galley, all back from the holiday and looking forward to this interview. Lee, this is a topic you and I have talked about for some time. I have been so excited about getting this gentleman into the studio. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Bitcoin expert with financialfits.com, Mr. Fitz Hall. How are you, man?
I'm doing amazing. Thanks for having me.
Well, Fitz, before we get too far into this, you are a Bitcoin millionaire, I guess. That means you got $1 million tied up in Bitcoin.
My fund has reached $1 million in cryptocurrency
earnings. Well, congratulations on that. But before we get too far into this, can you define some terms? Like, what does Bitcoin mean for the layperson out there? I'm sure they're hearing about it almost every day now in the news, but can you tell us what that means?
Okay. Bitcoin is basically the evolution, the next evolution of money. It's a digital currency. It's globalized. So it's just like any other currency that we have, the U.S. dollar, the euro, the only difference is it's decentralized. It's not controlled by any central authority. It's controlled by the people for the people. That's what Bitcoin is.
So now, how come the price fluctuates so dramatically?
Well, when you have a market that's controlled by individual people like us, we all have our own individual motives and emotions. So that's why you have such huge price swings, because this person or this group of people may choose to move this way and this group of people may choose to do something totally different, which translates to buying and selling.
Now, is there a finite amount of Bitcoin? Is that what contributes to the volatility?
The finite amount of Bitcoin, I wouldn't say it contributes as much to the volatility as much as it does to the huge increase in price. Because when you have a set amount of 21 million Bitcoin and people understand that there's about 16.5 million in circulation right now, based on supply and demand, most people want to get in before the supply maxes out. Because once the supply maxes out, there's no telling what Bitcoin will be worth. It can easily be worth over $1 million per coin.
So now where is that other 5 million at?
Okay, so the other coins are brought into circulation through a process called mining. Mm-hmm. Mining, put simply, without overcomplicating it, is...
It's not like somebody's in a mine with a...
No, but it's actually very similar to mining gold. In order to mine gold, you have to use a huge amount of resources. You have to use a huge amount of energy to go and mine and find gold. The same thing with Bitcoin. In order to mine Bitcoin, you have to use a huge amount of computer power to mine or find Bitcoin, so to speak. The only difference is this network of computers that the miners run are solving super complicated problems instead of going to physically dig for Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And the more computer power you have, the faster you can solve the transactions, the faster you can solve the puzzles, which validates the transactions. And when I say transaction, I mean me sending Bitcoin directly to you, you receiving Bitcoin, and vice versa.
Now, how did those 21 million coins or 21... Is it 21 million?
Yeah, it's 21 million total.
Now, how did they get there? Did somebody just like hide them around the world and said, go at it?
No, Bitcoin is essentially a protocol, a software protocol. So the developers, the creators of the Bitcoin protocol by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto, no one knows if it's a person or if it's a group. He simply created the code, released the code to the world, and vanished. But it's all built into this software. So no more than 21 million Bitcoin can ever be created based on the code in this software. And they've had thousands of coders look at this software up and down to validate that this is all accurate information and that the code doesn't have any holes in it. And something really interesting, they actually have a bounty for anyone who can crack Bitcoin.
Like crack it, like hack it?
Hack Bitcoin.
So like if somebody figured out, oh, I can do something and I can just make all the 21 million appear on my account.
Exactly. There's a bounty, a reward for anyone who can accomplish that.
Uh-huh. So now, how did you get started in this?
Well,
are you a technical person? Are you a coder or something?
I'm not technical at all. Well, I do understand technology a little bit, but not nearly as much as these guys who are building these blockchain technologies out here in crypto land. But I learned about Bitcoin a few years ago. I've always been interested in business. So a friend of mine gave some random guy my number. He said, hey, man, you should invest in Bitcoin. He didn't have much information on it. He said he wasn't investing in it. So I really cut that conversation extremely short. Fast forward to last year, I met a guy in my building and he was doing something with Bitcoin. He was making a nice amount of money a day and it really interested me. But I started researching a little more. This year, that brought me to this year where I pretty much had to start from scratch. You know, I started from scratch and I didn't have anything to fall back on. I wasn't interested in real estate anymore. And I just dived headfirst into Bitcoin. And I started with about $500 trading peer-to-peer Bitcoin on websites like Paxful and Local Bitcoins. And that's how I started.
So with $500 you started and then you bought $500 worth of Bitcoin? Is that how it works?
Essentially, yes. I did buy $500 worth of Bitcoin, but what I was doing was buying and selling extremely fast. So I would buy Bitcoin. I would buy $500 worth of Bitcoin, and then I would sell that for it anywhere from 12 to 18%. And then with the volatility in the market, sometimes that would translate to 20%. So as I started doing that more, my numbers jumped up from $500 a day to $2,000 a day.
So you had an account with one of these, what are they, services, the Bitcoin exchanges?
Back then, I didn't have an account with I had an account with major exchanges, but I wasn't doing this on major exchanges. I was doing what's called peer-to-peer trading, where you buy and sell directly to other people. So the website localbitcoins.com and paxful.com allows you to buy and sell. So I can go on there and place an ad and say, I have this amount of Bitcoin for sale for this price. And someone will go and directly put that cash into my bank account via cash deposit or wire transfer.
And so they could, and so they put the money in your bank account and then you give them that crypto key.
Yes, the website website acts as a escrow service. So it holds the Bitcoin in escrow while I validate that the funds have been transferred. Once I validate the funds have been transferred, I have the ability to release the escrow.
Then you release that crypto, your currency to them, and then they have that code.
And now they have the actual Bitcoin in their online wallet.
Uh-huh. And then that's the whole secret to Bitcoin, right? There's an online, it's not an actual coin. It's an online.
It's intangible.
Right. It's like, it's just letters and numbers, right? It's not anything other than that.
Yeah, it's very intangible. But what the interesting part about Bitcoin and what makes it really secure is the fact that they found a way to create digital scarcity. We've never had digital scarcity before. Up to this point, anything online could be copied, replicated, whatever. But the blockchain stops that from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what the blockchain is basically a universal ledger that allows everyone to see every single transaction that happens on the blockchain network, on the Bitcoin network.
So it's transparent.
It's very transparent.
And then so like that key that you have or that you sell and buy and sell it, once you give it to that person, or that person buys it from you, then they have it. And if they put it on their computer and they lose it, then it's gone, right? There's not, they can't just say, hey, I had this, here's proof.
It's gone. Once you lose Bitcoin, you lost Bitcoin.
That's forever.
It's forever. There's a lot of lost Bitcoin out there right now. A lot.
And that there could be, you know, millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin.
There's
right?
billions of dollars that are lost.
So how do you keep it safe? Is there a way? There's obviously a safe way to store it. Yes. Is that a whole nother cottage industry that's come up storing your Bitcoin?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the best way to store your Bitcoin. So there's a term. Are you guys familiar with BYOB, bring your own beer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In crypto, there's a term. BYOB, be your own bank. And that means you're responsible for the security. Right now, most of us are comfortable with the banks securing our funds for us, with FDIC insurance and things like that. With Bitcoin, you secure your Bitcoin by having possession of it. So when you have your Bitcoin on things like exchanges, you're putting your funds at risk, because if someone targets that exchange, then they have access to everyone's Bitcoin who that one exchange is the custodian of.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you have Bitcoin in the most secure form that you can, in the most secure protection form that you can have, which is called a hardware wallet. And those are the two industry leaders are Nano Ledger hardware wallets and Trezor wallets. And they're very small devices, looks like a small USB. And you put your Bitcoin on there. And the only way someone can access it is if they have access to that physical device, as well as the password that you have inside of your head.
And so then it's on this device, and that device can't be like demagnetized or electrically zapped and makes gone.
That device is very secure. It does not connect to the internet. It is tamper-proof as far as physical.
You can't hit it with a hammer.
You can hit it with a
oh, really?
You can hit it with a hammer, but there are things that you can do to recover it if the physical device actually gets destroyed. And that's where the passphrase comes in at. And the passphrase is when you set up a hardware wallet or any secure wallet, they'll give you 12 random words that have no connection to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to write those 12 words down and hide them in a place that is super secure. Maybe a safe deposit box, maybe a grandmother's house who isn't moving anytime soon, wherever, just somewhere that is going to be extremely safe and no one else knows where it is.
All right. So could you cash out if you wanted to, or cash out, I don't know, 20% today if you wanted to? You said, you know, I'm just going to take it easy for a little while.
Absolutely.
And then get green U.S. money.
That's why investors love the Bitcoin, the crypto markets, where especially the Bitcoin market, because it is so liquid. You can go and cash out 20% right now on an exchange and then have that wire sent directly to your bank account today.
So like within seconds, within minutes, or within hours?
Well, it depends on how large of an order size you have. For the typical investor, it'll be pretty quick. Now, if you're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars, you don't want to shake the market up. So there are different measures that you'll take, maybe over-the-counter trade versus having a $100 million order hit the market and Bitcoin price tanks thousands of dollars.
So like right now, would it be, how easy is it for me right this second to go some website and buy Bitcoin?
Very easy. You download an app called Coinbase right now, and Coinbase will ask you for some verification questions, allow you to attach your bank account, and they make it extremely simple to not only buy Bitcoin, but Litecoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash.
So those are other cryptocurrencies?
Absolutely.
And what stops someone like Fitz Hall to create Fitz Hall currency?
Absolutely nothing. If I wanted to create Fitz Hall currency, I could create Fitz Hall currency.
And then put it out in the market.
Yes.
And you can say, look, there's $1 billion worth of Fitz Hall currency, of which I own 99% of it. And I'll put 1% out there for the market. And then it gets kind of, you know, volatile like all the other currencies. And then you are the majority kind of owner of all that.
I could do that. But the key thing in blockchain technology is the decentralization of it, meaning that the community has to be in consensus of what's going on. So if the community doesn't agree with the model that I've presented to them, they're not going to adopt it. And I'll have a bunch of worthless Fitz Hall coins.
Mm-hmm. But I heard, I don't know, you tell me if this is true, that the majority, there's a small percentage of people who own the majority of Bitcoin.
There is a small percentage of people who own the majority of Bitcoin because they were those early tech adopters who were just mining Bitcoin, you know, not even knowing if it would be or reach the levels that it reached. And a lot of those guys lost the Bitcoin. A lot of those guys, they saved it on the hardware, kind of forgot about it. And then when things start taking off, and a lot of those guys sold it. But yes, ultimately, there is a small percentage of people who hold a large portion of Bitcoin, but they're very passionate about it.
But we don't know if any of them are the originators of Bitcoin.
We do not know who's the originator of Bitcoin. No one knows that.
So it could have been like Fitz Hall, like some guy invents this, puts it out to the world, and then says, hey, world. And then eventually a percentage of people said, this is the coolest thing I'm in.
That's exactly what happened. This guy, it was released during the economic crash back in 2008, 2009.
Smart.
And, you know, a lot of the theme behind crypto is freedom. There's a lot of very liberal people in crypto. And being, you know, the average person being hit with all of those liabilities that the big banks put on us, and now we having to sacrifice our children to bail them out, you mm-hmm. know, while their executives get bonuses and
right,
stuff.
They're profiting.
Exactly. So they released this I guess as a counterforce to that, to prevent that from happening again. And once a small group of adopters, you know, realized that it was a viable technology and something that really could change the world. They've been working on this for a while, but this was the first time that, once again, digital scarcity was created.
Right.
That was the trick that Satoshi Nakamoto did, create digital scarcity, which was the blockchain.
And then Bitcoin was the first kind of player, or the main first player in this. But now you mentioned several other ones.
There's about 1,300 cryptocurrencies out there.
Right. And they're all have this similar premise, though, right? Where it's transparency and it's all out there and it's all kind of decentralized. They all have that in common, don't they?
Exactly. They're, for the most part, they're all decentralized. Now, there's a very popular one out there right now called Ripple. Ironically, is not as decentralized. It's more of a centralized currency, and more of the advanced players in the markets understand that this is a centralized currency. So they kind of stay away from it. And there's more things involved with Ripple that make, you know, smarter investors a little more weary. But the centralization of it is what drives the more smart investors away
from
it.
You prefer decentralized.
Exactly.
Now, for you, you wrote the Bitcoin breakdown in yes. order to kind of explain this or to educate.
Yes, I wrote the Bitcoin breakdown as a way to answer all of the basic questions about Bitcoin storage, about what is Bitcoin, about how to purchase Bitcoin, any basic question that, you know, mm-hmm. I'm typically asked about Bitcoin, the book covers in really easy, simple to understand layman terms.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking here, bringing this back to how a layperson, particularly in the small business arena, might capitalize on this. Something about our services. You know, we have, we do all these shows, but we also have people who underwrite shows.
Right.
And we show them how to leverage the platform to build their business. Could we put ourselves in a position to take even partial payment in Bitcoin? And is that a way for us to diversify our whole wealth building economic plan?
That is actually one of the opportunities that I tell people about on how to be a part of or how to be a part of the Bitcoin environment or community. Not only can you trade or invest in Bitcoin, but you can also accept Bitcoin as a merchant. And that helps build the infrastructure to create a stronger community for Bitcoin, which creates more adoption.
So we could offer a sponsorship payable only in Bitcoin.
You can do that. Absolutely.
And so there's people doing that right now?
There are a lot of businesses that have opened the doors for Bitcoin payments. Yes.
And then if we did that, then there'd probably be a market for somebody to help broker those kind of arrangements to help us.
Yeah. You know. So there's a company and they're actually local to Atlanta. It's called BitPay. BitPay is sort of a payment processor for merchants to accept Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And they would help you onboard and accept Bitcoin and transition it into cash if that's what you chose to do.
Or we could just keep it as Bitcoin.
Exactly.
All right. So one unit, like today, is $14,000-$15,000, right? And when I say unit, one coin is anyway, and that it's in that
one coin
range, right?
That's correct.
Now, sometimes when in the stock market, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I'm, you know, middle-aged business guy. Mm-hmm. I've got some blue chip stocks. Every now and again, they'll split the stock. You know, and then you have twice as many, but they're worth half as much. Is that likely to happen with Bitcoin as well?
Well, it has already happened a few times.
Oh, okay.
So earlier, remember I mentioned on Coinbase, you can buy those four cryptocurrencies.
Right.
Bitcoin Cash is one of those, in your terms, a stock split?
Right, right.
Okay. So as I mentioned before, the theme behind these blockchain technologies is the community and how it's community driven. So major changes can't happen without having consensus from the majority of the community. If a portion of the community doesn't agree with the direction that the coin or the other community is going into, they can choose to branch off and do what you would call a fork, which means that now they create an entirely different coin. They create an entirely different coin forked off of the original code. And they, like you said, we don't know what the price will be until it hits the market, but oftentimes it's half or less than half. Bitcoin Cash is not even worth half of what Bitcoin is right now, though. But it was free money dropped from the sky.
But that's a way for a smaller client to buy a smaller service from us that may not cost $15,000. That's why I was looking.
You don't have to buy it in $15,000 increments.
You don't have to buy any increment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can buy $5 worth of Bitcoin. You can buy $2 worth of Bitcoins.
Okay.
It's divisible by the 100 millionth decimal place. So there's 8 decimal places behind that one in the Bitcoin.
Right. So you can sell in any.
We can hop on here right now or in a little while. We can open whatever, $500, $1,000 Business Radio X wallet thingy bobber. And then when we're talking to somebody, we want to do something progressive. And we can say you can pay all or some of this in Bitcoin. That's doable.
That's very doable.
I mean, I'm just really intrigued with that idea.
So now, what's your business? Are you just an investor or you help other people navigate this world? Like, what's your business in regard to Bitcoin?
Okay, so currently I manage a small cryptocurrency fund and I'm in the process of, I have a few private coaching clients where I teach them how to manage their own fund as well as teach them how to trade. I'm in the process of building a course to help the average person build and manage their own cryptocurrency portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I have going on. I also have, I got a lot going on. I have a software being developed to help traders and investors manage their trades as well as their portfolio. Currently mm-hmm. in cryptocurrency, you have tons of spreadsheets out there. And we're looking to bring all of that in-house and make the performance metrics in an easily digestible format to increase performance over time.
Now, do you have any advice for somebody who's just getting into this right now? Is there a basic way that an individual can say, you know what, I'm going to throw $1,000 at this. You know, how can I do that? And, you know, other than, you know, spending weeks just learning the ins and outs of this.
Okay. Well, I'm very confident in the long-term view of Bitcoin. So one of the best ways to learn is through experience. A lot of people don't understand Bitcoin until they buy Bitcoin and see and experience a transaction for themselves. So even if it's not $1,000, even if it's $100, you can go to Coinbase, buy $100 of Bitcoin and send that $100 of Bitcoin to your own private wallet, whether it's a wallet on your phone, whether it's a hardware wallet, or whether it's a desktop wallet that's more secure than Coinbase.
So now I have to get a wallet, right? Do I have to wait for, like, how do you get a wallet?
A couple of wallets I'll recommend.
Go to Amazon. They have wallets there?
No. The wallets are typically free, and depends on the platform that you want to host your wallet. Whether it's a smartphone, the wallet app that I use. The important thing is you want to be able to control your private keys.
Right.
That's what gives you access to the Bitcoin. If you do not control your private keys, you do not have any Bitcoin. The person who has your private keys has your Bitcoin.
Right.
So. The hardware wallet, as I mentioned, is Nano Ledger and Trezor. The mobile wallet, which is really easy, you don't have to wait for anything in the mail, I use is Copay and also Edgeless Wallet. Now, as far as a desktop wallet, I use Exodus.
So you have three different wallets. How many wallets do you have?
I have
10,
a few.
100?
I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have about 6 or 7 different wallets.
All right, but
that's not for the typical person.
All right, but is there also this industry popping up where I say, look, you know, I know the B2B business, radio business, that's my thing. You're an expert. I'm willing to give you X percent or whatever. Just here's $1,000 a month or whatever. Is that an emerging industry where I just pay somebody like you?
Yeah, I don't want to deal with all this. This seems like a hassle.
Right. Just like I have a financial advisor, you know, I mean, that's happening. Is that starting to happen too?
That's absolutely happening. That's what I do with my funds. So I have a few family members and close friends who don't want to deal with Bitcoin or cryptocurrency. So they give me their cash and I put it into a fund and I manage it and they get reports on what that fund is doing. Now, another level of that is if you don't want to invest in a fund, you can simply go to Coinbase. And Coinbase, as you stated, $1,000 a month or week or however, you can break it down to automatic payments, whether it's daily, weekly, monthly, of buying this particular asset, whether it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, or whatever. So those are two different methods of
handling. So I'm giving them cash. And they're just buying on my behalf Bitcoin.
Well,
is
depends
what's
on
happening?
Which method?
The second Coinbase.
Method, the Coinbase. Okay. No, Coinbase, you'll connect your bank account and you'll say, hey, I want to buy $1,000 of Bitcoin per month.
Right.
They're going to automatically withdraw that from your account.
Right.
And you'll see that Bitcoin pop up into your account.
Right. But my account, I don't have to have a wallet. I don't have to do any of that.
Well, I personally would not suggest leaving my Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency on Coinbase or any centralized exchange because they are a central point. That's what hackers look for. They look for a central point to, they're going to look for the biggest bang for their buck. And Coinbase is a huge target. It hasn't happened yet, but we've had a lot of major exchange hacks.
Okay, so now I go on Coinbase the first of the month. Does that transaction, it puts it in my account. I grab my magic wallet, I plug it in there, and I download my currency into my magic wallet, and then I'm good to go.
That's pretty much right.
I love it. This is so cool.
There's no ATM machine yet, is there?
There are ATMs. There's in Atlanta, I'm pretty sure there's at least 300 Bitcoin ATMs floating around here at this point.
But
the fees on those ATMs are astronomical. They are crazy. You're going to pay about 20-25% over market.
So price. What does that ATM do? You put in the code and it gives you
you put in cash? Some of them do both, but most of the time you put in cash and you get Bitcoin.
And then they just dump it into your magic wallet.
So you'll have one of those mobile wallets mentioned, like Copay or Edgeless. And it'll be what's called a QR code. You know those little boxes?
Right.
Right. The squiggly lines in it. You'll scan that QR code on this machine, on this Bitcoin ATM. And the Bitcoin ATM, once it receives payment, it'll send the Bitcoin to that wallet that's attached to that QR code.
So do you envision even the most conservative among us and the most conservative among CPAs and financial advisors, you know, the guy down at Raymond James or whatever, at some point in the future, just like they might recommend, you know, we have X percent allocated to this industry sector or this type of equity. Do you envision at some point in the future, you know, my guy who will become my daughter's guy probably say, you know, Katie, you really ought to think about putting 15% into Bitcoin or crypto?
It's already happening.
Wow.
Yeah. It's already happening. We have.
But the only difference, though, is your recommendation is whatever you got in Bitcoin, you better pull it out of wherever it's at and put it in your own private wallet.
If it's not under your bed. If it's not in a fund where someone who understands the security measures that you need to have in order to protect your cryptocurrencies, because as a fund manager, you will have a duty to protect those funds. So that's your duty to understand the security. So you should be able to trust that that person is going to manage the security properly so that you aren't at risk. But Coinbase, on the other hand, or GDAX, or any of these other exchanges, you're just kind of out there in the water. Their job is to just make it easy to buy Bitcoin and sell Bitcoin. Their job is not to necessarily, it's a part of their job, but that's not their main job. Right.
But you as a fund manager feel a sense of responsibility to protect.
Absolutely. So personally, I never have more on the exchange than I need on the exchange. If I'm not trading with those coins, then typically it's not on the exchange.
It's in your magic wallet.
It's in my hardware wallet.
All right. Is there some wisdom to the idea that between now and this 21 million cap, this is the time to get in? Is that true? Or there's going to be opportunity beyond as well?
Well, the thing is, what I suggest to people is what's called dollar cost averaging. And that's basically what you mentioned earlier.
Right.
When you have a certain amount of money that you want to place into Bitcoin and you split it up in the course of a couple of months, 6 months, a year, depending on how much you have and how much you want to break it up to. But $1,000 every 2 weeks, but Bitcoin moves extremely fast. So you may want to, you know, do something every week. You know, I know some folks who have deposits going into Coinbase every week. I mean, every day. So it all depends on your personal
preference. But you're doing some version of dollar cost averaging where you're just buying it at whatever the price is that minute. And you know, over time, it's going to kind of settle rather than you hope you bought it the right day. And then tomorrow goes up $5,000. Then the next day it goes down $10,000.
Exactly. Because what happens is, so you guys remember Bitcoin a few weeks ago was about $20,000.
Right.
Somebody bought $20,000 worth of Bitcoin.
Exactly.
now it's
$15,000 today. And then a year ago, it was $1,000.
Exactly. And a couple of days ago, it was about $11,000 for a second. So if you were dollar cost averaging, if you bought at $20,000, you wouldn't be as hurt because you've been dollar cost averaging.
Right. You might have bought it at $11,000 the next day and you'd be back today where you should be at $15,000.
So just like the other markets, they're... Right. At least two and probably many different ways to approach this. Someone with your understanding, maybe you're watching the market really closely, minute by minute, hour by hour. Lee and I have no business doing that. We need to do dollar cost averaging and make it more. Somebody like you might take at least a percentage of your million plus and play with it a little more aggressively, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I recommend for people who have, you know, outside income sources and they don't want to do a complete career path change. Just dollar cost averaging because it's extremely simple, it's straightforward, and you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck.
But that requires a commitment of time and investment into this. You're kind of saying I'm going all in on this because I'm going to dollar cost average for a period of time. It doesn't serve a purpose to dollar cost average four times.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But Coinbase luckily makes it extremely easy for you. So you can kind of set and forget it. If you know how much income you have coming into that specific bank account that is attached to Coinbase, you can pretty much rest assured that those funds are going to come out and you're going to have your Bitcoin at that designated rate that you've set, whether it's daily or frequency that you've set, whether it's daily, weekly, monthly, or biweekly.
And then Coinbase, though, like you said before, does not guarantee that money. That's not like the Federal Reserve guarantees when you put it in the bank, they're going to guarantee up to a certain amount of money.
Now, I think Coinbase does have some type of insurance, but I would have to research it a little more. But once again, you don't want to put yourself in that position where you're the first person to experience what Coinbase's insurance is really like.
Right.
So.
I want to, I don't know who that sponsor or underwriter will be, but I want to be open-minded about this and kind of keep this in our tool belt for our own selves, because we're a service. Think about consultants and professional service people, where they're largely paid on the value they deliver for their clients, and they don't necessarily have to put a lot of hard assets into that equation. Right. It's not cost plus materials like a manufacturing concern. I would think small business people who run a service type of business ought to really think this through and include this in their mix.
Right. And it that will come with more adoption and more technological innovations, because currently the transaction speed is very slow compared to what we're used to, Visa and MasterCard transactions. So that could cause some problems, as well as the transaction fees. So currently, Bitcoin is actually a better store of value than it is as a everyday transactional currency. But there are innovations in the works that will allow Bitcoin to have transaction speeds faster than Visa.
And the more people accept it and the more people get in, it feeds itself, right? The better and better and faster all that's going to come.
Well, the more people who use it, the more the value increases, right, because the community is growing. But the more people that use it currently actually slows down the network. So that's why I said currently it's better as a store of value. But this year, hopefully, we'll see what's called the Lightning Network, which will make the transaction speeds much, much faster.
Now, you mentioned fees. So what would be the fee if I bought one Bitcoin? Like, what's the cost in addition to the price of the Bitcoin?
Well,
about,
I don't use Coinbase, but what I would suggest is, if you're concerned about the fees and you sign up for Coinbase, also sign up for their exchange. It's called GDAX. Mm-hmm. And when you place a limit order, you can buy Bitcoin at zero fees. But if you use Coinbase, I'm pretty sure somewhere around 1%, maybe 2%, mm-hmm, on top of whatever the price is.
So you pay, if it's $1,000, you're paying another $100 or $200 for a fee for the transaction.
Yes, don't quote me on that, but right, I but do know Coinbase.
But it could be a couple percentage.
Yes, if you're using a service like Coinbase, absolutely.
It's not 2.9 plus 30 cents.
Right.
But I bet it gets there. I bet you it gets there.
Right. Now, if somebody wanted to learn more or get a hold of the Bitcoin breakdown or get, you know, in the loop with you in terms of, you know, getting onto your education platform, what's the best way to find you?
I'm most active on Twitter and Instagram currently. And my handle is Financial Fitz.
F-I-T-Z.
F-I-T-Z.
And you take payment in cash or Bitcoin, right? I would imagine.
Well, when I do coaching, cash or Bitcoin. But the ebook is completely free. All of the information I give out on my Instagram is completely free.
Good stuff.
Well, Fitz Hall, Bitcoin expert, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer, Katie Galley, our guest today, Fitz Hall, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.